This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 18th, 2019. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature. Turmoil continues in Hong Kong. Protests continue against China. I speak with Isaac Cheng, vice chair of the pro-democracy group Demosisto, about the ongoing struggle for the civil rights of Hong Kongers. And the 109th Pacific National Exhibition Fair is open until Labor Day. The sounds of Media Preview Day with PNE President Shelley Frost and others. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or are there a lot of hypocrites out there in Canada? Some say that US President Donald Trump should be impeached for firing the FBI director in 2017, but in their very next breath, they say that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau should be re-elected after effectively doing the same thing to the Attorney General of Canada. If you know someone like that, well, that person is really no friend of government integrity or accountability. That person is a partisan. That person is a fan. Trudeau trumped Trump. He broke the conflict of interest law for the second time in the SNC-Lavalin scandal. Trudeau and other senior officials ignored warnings to respect the independence of the Attorney General at the time, who was Jody Wilson-Raybould. Trudeau fans like to point to the poor ethics of the previous Conservative administration under Stephen Harper. Harper was disciplined at the ballot box after Trudeau ran an election in 2015 using words like real change and better. When Trudeau fans keep pointing to Harper, what they really mean is, our guy isn't as bad as the last guy. But he's bad nonetheless. That is a cheap cop-out because Trudeau promised higher standards. Instead, he fell below what Canadians deserve. At a campaign stop in West Vancouver on September 10th, 2015, this is what Trudeau said to me.
You haven't talked about any efforts to actually crack down on corruption. It's a big problem across the country,
especially in Montreal. Openness and transparency is what Canadians expect of their governments. They've had 10 years of the most secretive government in Canada's history with Mr. Harper, and that's why sunshine being the best disinfectant means that we're actually going to be answering Canadians' call for better government through openness, transparency, and integrity. Having a prime minister that tells the truth will be a nice change.
A broken promise. Trudeau also lied to reporters on February 7th of this year about the SNC-Lavalin scandal when the Globe and Mail broke the story about why Jody Wilson-Raybould was really no longer the Attorney General. What is needed now? Well, a full police investigation, definitely. But leaders of the other parties need to articulate their position to stamp out corruption in Canada. Conservative Andrew Scheer, NDP's Jagmeet Singh, Green Elizabeth May, People's Party's Maxime Bernier. One of you, all of you, bring a solution to the table. Trudeau never really cared to stop corruption. He just kowtowed to the most notorious corporation in Quebec because it was politically convenient. He cares only about his job. He didn't really bring the new way of government that he promised. Will voters discipline him at the polls on October 21st? Wait and see. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. Bob Linarduzzi was demoted from president to club liaison of the Vancouver Whitecaps. The bombshell August 16th announcement comes amid the worst season of pro soccer since the original Whitecaps kicked off in 1974. Linarduzzi was a player with the North American Soccer League team from 1974 to 1984, and then was a coach with the 86ers, who launched in the Canadian Soccer League in 1987. He was briefly out as general manager in 2002 under then-owner David Stadnik, just days before he received the Jewish Community Centre of Greater Vancouver's Sports Personality of the Year Award. Leonard Uzzi returned to the fold when Greg Kerfoot bought the A-League team later in 2002 and has run the soccer operations of the team since it moved to Major League Soccer in 2011. Leonard Uzzi is under fire after members of the W League women's team from 2007 and 2008 went public earlier this year, accusing their coach Bob Berarda of harassment. One of the players, whistleblower Kira McCormick, said that Leonard Uzzi did not keep confidential her complaints to him. The Vancouver police began reviewing new evidence in April, but the Breaker.News has exclusively learned that the North Vancouver RCMP is investigating. At an August 16th news conference, Whitecaps minority owner Jeff Mallett said there was no connection between the scandal and Leonard Uzzi's demotion. Leonard Uzzi will remain with the club as a consultant and goodwill ambassador while the Whitecaps search for a new sporting director. The demotion of Leonard Uzzi happened the day before the Whitecaps hosted Wayne Rooney and DC United, and 2 days after a different kind of announcement down the I-5. Seattle Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson, his singer wife Kira, and hip-hop star Macklemore joined the Seattle Sounders ownership group. The Sounders won the U.S. Open Cup 4 times and the MLS Cup in 2016. They have qualified for the playoffs in all 10 seasons. The Whitecaps? Well, they've only won 1 game in the playoffs, and that says it all. In other headlines from the Breaker.News, condo buyer from Nanjing says China currency controls led to collapsed West Van deal. Jun Chen of Nanjing, China took action in BC Supreme Court on August 8th against Ani Taylorway Properties Limited, the company developing the terraced Evelyn condos on a slope behind Park Royal Shopping Center. Chen wants her deposit returned after Ani canceled the contract while she was struggling to bring money out of China. From father to son, a liberal land boondoggle in West Vancouver is back in the spotlight. A broken 45-year-old liberal campaign promise threatens to cost taxpayers even more as Justin Trudeau's deficit government seeks re-election this October. In April 1974, Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau's Liberal government announced it would build the Pacific Environment Center and a Coast Guard base across from Vancouver's Stanley Park. It took out a 71-year lease on 55 acres east of the Lionsgate Bridge on Capilano Indian Reserve 5. Trudeau stayed in power, but local MP and Environment Minister Jack Davis lost his seat in the election. The complex was never built, but the Squamish Nation has cashed rent checks ever since. It got more than $13 million this year, but a new assessment for the Squamish Nation says it should be getting almost $31 million a year. So, the Squamish Nation filed a lawsuit against the government on August 7th in BC Supreme Court. And Justin Trudeau makes Canadian history as the first Prime Minister to break the conflict of interest law twice. For the second time in less than 2 years, Trudeau was found to have broken conflict of interest laws, this time over the SNC-Lavalin scandal. In his August 14th report, Ethics Commissioner Mario Dion found evidence of 4 attempts to influence Jody Wilson-Raybould while she was Attorney General in a bid to overturn the decision to prosecute SNC-Lavalin for bribery and corruption. The report said Trudeau was given a copy of his comments to the commissioner on July 19th. That was the first day of 10 personal days that Trudeau spent in BC. The timeline might explain why Trudeau traveled 6 times to BC for photo ops, fundraisers, and party rallies on a government jet between late May and the start of August. You can read more in the Breaker.News. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. When Great Britain ceded control of Hong Kong in 1997 to the People's Republic of China, Beijing promised to maintain a one-country, two-systems policy for 50 years in Hong Kong. But Hong Kongers are worried that China wants to take full control much sooner, so they are pushing back. They want more democracy, and they want to protect their civil rights. Protests since the spring against the extradition bill in Hong Kong, which would have made it easier for China to jail and prosecute dissidents. But Hong Kongers have marched by the hundreds of thousands. Some estimate 1 million people have protested. I caught up with Isaac Chang, the vice chair of the Demasisto pro-democracy organization via Skype from Hong Kong.
What are the 5 demands that our listeners may not know about that your organization and others in Hong Kong civil society are trying to tell the world about?
Actually, we have 5 demands for this whole movement. For example, to completely withdraw the extradition bills, for pull out the right wing from the protest and to stop arrest and prosecuting the Hong Kong protesters, to investigating the violence of the police, and the last thing and the most important thing is the real universal suffrage of Hong Kong democracy system.
Yeah, this is a real pivotal movement and pivotal moment for the future of Hong Kong. It was transferred out of British control to Chinese control in 1997. The Chinese government at the time promised to maintain a one country, two systems policy for 50 years after 1997, but there's been erosion of that. Can you talk about how life has changed in recent years, how there's been more control by China?
Actually, you can see that the Chinese government not meant to keep the promise of the joint declaration that signed by the British and China. And I have to emphasize that actually it promises that we have democracy, elections, real universal suffrage for the Hong Kong system when there is transformation after to China's hand. But for now, there is not a democracy elections in Hong Kong at this moment also. So I think why the Hong Kong people are coming out and speaking for the democracy demands. And secondly, I will answer the question that actually there is a lot of lifestyle have been changed. For example, the freedom of the press have been being indoctrinated and also being affected by the Chinese government. For example, there is a lot of press have been bought by the Chinese government. The bookseller, the book publisher, even the textbook publisher are bought by the liaison office of the Republic of China. And for example, the disqualification of the legislative councillor, and also there is 150 people coming to Hong Kong every day as a resident from China. So those are influences come from the China government. And in this injustice government system, then the chief executive are chosen by the Communist Party. So this is the obvious effects that the Beijing regime in Hong Kong.
Now, the protest movement this year really started, even though it's been mostly about the extradition law in recent weeks. The 30th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre, June 4th, really brought a lot of people out from Hong Kong onto the streets who remember that. And there's many people like you who were born many years afterwards. This has been very much a concern for people from Hong Kong that led to a lot of people from Hong Kong to move to places like Canada because they feared that there would be another crackdown. Talk about what the Tiananmen Square massacre means to you and to your family, and how that affected you and caused your student activism.
Actually, for me, we can see that the truth of the Communist Party, they didn't care about the life of Hong Kong. They didn't care about the life of their people. They're only caring about the benefits for the regime. So for us, or for a lot of Hong Kong people, they truly see how Communist Party works, and they didn't respect the right of the people there. So there is a lot of fear created from there. So and also to let Communist Party and the Beijing regime untrustful since then.
And we've seen the protests evolve to be in public squares, to be in MTR transit stations, even to the airport to get more attention. We've seen a lot of peace and a lot of order. We've also seen some disorder, some violence. You know, the police and the triads. That was quite shocking when the triads started attacking people at transit stations. Now we're seeing images of Chinese military in Shenzhen across the border amassing and practicing, and we've seen the videos by the Chinese government. Is there fear among activists like you about going forward in the future? Although, is there also some solace, at least, that the world is now paying attention?
Actually, I would say that the Communist Party are using two strategies to rule Hong Kong people. The first is using economic benefits to attract the Hong Kong people and not touching about the political parts of Hong Kong. Secondly, they're using a scare tactics to fear people. They create a fear atmosphere throughout the Hong Kong society to make Hong Kong people afraid of touching the political part of Hong Kong. So I think actually the atmosphere of fear actually created, and no matter using police, no matter using gangs, or even though the Chinese army there is assigned to come to Hong Kong, actually this is included inside the fear tactics. So I think there is some fear for Hong Kong protesters. But actually, I can tell you that for Hong Kong society, for the teenagers of Hong Kong, we actually sacrifice anything to take part in this movement. So we urge that the Communist Party, please don't underestimate the sacrifices we made and the will for us to fight for the 5 demands that we urge for.
One of the other things that happened this week was Li Ka-shing, the Hong Kong tycoon, bought front page ads in newspapers to put his opinion forward. Li Ka-shing is known in Vancouver. He bought a major part of real estate in downtown Vancouver, the old Expo 86 site. He also owns the Husky Oil Company in Canada. He's well known around the world as one of the major tycoons. What was your reaction to what he said in the newspaper ads?
I think he is a really well-known people, but he is not a people that we are respectful, because actually Li Ka-shing, he have a lot of money because of the Hong Kong people who are actually putting a lot of effort and work on his company that he owned. So actually he is getting a lot of benefits from Hong Kong society and the Communist Party. So actually the front pages of the advertisement, I didn't think of there is a lot of influences for Hong Kong people. But I have to say that actually in the position of him, he is also saying that please don't harm the Hong Kong teenagers. Actually, there is a front page that used it for a old words of the poem from the old China. And the meaning of it is not to harm the offsprings of the Hong Kong people. So it means that to protect the Hong Kong teenagers. Even he is getting a lot of benefit from Communist Party and the Hong Kong government. He also said that. So it means to be really getting a lot of attention and give a clear message to the government that you shouldn't do the things like that.
And coming up, October 1st is China's National Day. It's the 70th anniversary of the founding of Communist China. It's going to be a big event for China. A lot of China's friends around the world, the United Front groups in other countries, in Canada and Australia and elsewhere, are preparing to celebrate that. But do you think that is what's motivating China to push back against Hong Kong and not listen to the Hong Kong people? Is it because of China having this very major anniversary coming this fall?
I think actually Communist Party, no matter if it is anniversary or not, they will use the strategy like this. For example, you can see the umbrella movement, but the scale of the umbrella movement is not as large as this time. So they didn't use that high level of power to put against the Hong Kong protester. But for this time, actually, no matter is it being anniversary, they will use a strategy like that. But the anniversary are giving justification for the regime to do this thing, because they don't want to put a bad image for the international society that actually one country, two system is a complete failure. For example, actually the Taiwan society are looking as Hong Kong as a case for one country, two system.
And finally, do you have a message for politicians around the world? Do you have a message for people listening around the world, especially people here in Canada? What is your message?
My main message is not to be feared by the scare tactics of the Communist Party, because Communist Party wants to use the fear to rule the people first. Secondly, don't trust the benefits that brought by the Communist Party and also the Canada government and also the government in the international society. Please don't only focusing on the economic benefits that bring by the Chinese. You have the value of democracy, freedom, and human rights, etc. You have the responsibility to urge the government to uphold those moral principles. And the last thing is international supports are really important for Hong Kong society, because Hong Kong as an Asia world city, the international society have great part inside or speaking ground for the Hong Kong society. You should use that power like that.
Well, thank you very much for joining us from Hong Kong via Skype. Isaac Cheng, the vice chair of Demasisto.
The 109th Pacific National Exhibition Fair began August 17th and runs through Labor Day on September 2nd at Hastings Park in Vancouver. PNE President Shelley Frost hosted reporters on August 15th for a preview of this year's fair. Frost took reporters on a tour of the Snap Happy Selfie Pavilion, a stop at TransLink's Transport 2050 Pavilion, and Jimmy's Lunch, the hamburger stand marking its 90th anniversary at the PNE Fair. Here are highlights of the media preview of this year's PNE Fair.
Well, it's mid-August, and you know what that means. And it's not rain, and it's not back to school yet. It means that this Saturday, we're going to be throwing open the doors and celebrating our 109th PNE Fair. It's going to feature all your traditional favorites, but it's got a whole lot of new to explore as well. We're bringing you hundreds of performances, exhibits, and attractions, all designed to entertain the more than 700,000 British Columbians who are going to come here and celebrate with us over the next 2 weeks. The fair has more than a century of tradition, providing high quality, free with admission entertainment for all ages and all interests. And we're still proudly the largest ticketed event in BC. And now, our highly anticipated nightly feature show that's going in the Pacific Coliseum. It's a spectacle of memory demonstrations and mystical showmanship. Here is the man they call Ravine.
Man they call Ravine.
The most popular family entertainment show in the history of Canadian theater is back. People from the audience volunteer to become stars in the wildest, funniest show that has left millions of people crying with laughter all over the world.
Please join me in welcoming Tyrone Ravine, next generation Ravine the Impossibilist 2.0.
It is a wonderful honor for the Ravine family to be invited to Canada's greatest summer festival event. And this year, in the spirit of the PNE, we're going to add some spectacular and fascinating additions to the Ravine Show. The Ravine Show has a reputation of being the most successful scene show on the top theater circuit in Canada since 1961. And we are, for the last 25 years, I've made a career out of designing, creating, and building some of the greatest special effects you've seen for many, literally hundreds of superstars all over the world. And we're going to implement some fascinating special effects for this show as well. This is a great honor. I have great memories of my father and mother bringing us to the PNE every summer. We did live in this city for many, many years. This is one of my family's biggest hot spots. We have performed literally between 500 and 600 performances within a 100-mile radius of where I stand right now since 1961. And it is just the greatest place to be for our family. Vancouver, we absolutely love the people. We absolutely love the city. I've never seen a more beautiful city in my life, and I've traveled a lot of different countries. But I look forward to seeing you all there, for children from 5 years old to people that are 95 years old. You'll find this to be one of the most fascinating and entertaining shows ever to appear at the PNE. And this is the PNE, the greatest summer festival event in Canada. I hope to see you there. Thank you very much.
We always say that our core demographic is 2 to 92, so that fits right in. We're we're now going to honor another part of our fair family this year, the Parsons family. Whose booth, Jimmy's Lunch, we're standing in front of here. And Jimmy's Lunch is celebrating an incredible milestone, 90 years at the Peony Fair. Now, 90 years, four generations. Since 1929, the Parsons family has been manning this booth, and they've been serving hot dogs, hamburgers, fries, and fish and chips to literally generations of British Columbians. Jimmy's Lunch is probably most well known for those iconic fried onions. They use about 10 tons every fair. And it was those onions, which I thought was really interesting, that were named, those onions were named by Vancouver Magazine at the turn of the 20th century as one of the 10 most memorable things about the 1900s in Vancouver. That's outstanding. The grandchildren and great-grandchildren of the Parsons family, of the original founder, Jimmy Parsons, continue to work the stand each year.
Who wants food?
Yeah.
Step right up.
We're very honored to be here and thankful for the P&E to let us be here for 90 years. We're hoping for 100. I'd just like to thank my family, especially. Without family, you can't do this. And we've had a lot of family, aunts, uncles, grandparents work here for generations. And a lot of you people, if you've lived here, you probably know somebody who's worked for us, as it's been thousands of people over the years. And it's a great honor. And thanks for coming out. Enjoy the fair.
Shelley Frost also gave a solemn memorial to the late Hunky Bill Koenig, the former sports reporter and radio advertising salesman who ran the Hunky Bill's pierogi stand for more than half a century. Koenig, who was also an owner of racehorses at Hastings Park, died last week at age 88.
And I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge a very significant loss in our fair family. As many of you have undoubtedly heard, two nights ago, we lost one of our longest-serving fair concessionaires, Hunky Bill. Bill's been part of the Peony family for over 52 years, and all started back when he made his friend a bet for 10 bucks that he'd be able to work his way into the Peony Fair and sell his Ukrainian-style pierogies. Well, he made his way down to the grounds, talked us into it, and really the rest is history. He won that $10 bet, and he's been with us for 52 years. And really since then, Bill has become one of the most iconic pitchmen and restaurateurs in Canadian history.
In the 1980s, Koenig flogged his own pierogi maker on TV ads.
Hello, Marushka, this is Hunky Bill, the banyak who made pierogies famous. And with this, Hunky Bill's little pierogi maker, I'm going to show you how to make pierogies at home, quick and easy. Simply roll out your dough, spread a layer over the pierogi maker, spoon on your favorite topping, add the top layer of dough, roll it down, trim off the excess, and pop out your pierogies. Boil them and serve. Hunky Bill's little pierogi maker also makes wonton, ravioli, and pastries. Available at these fine stores, and makes a great gift.
So before we move on, I just want to take a moment on behalf of everybody here at the P&E, I want to extend our condolences to Bill's wife, Kay, to his sons, Clayton, Bill Jr. and Mark, and to the entire Koenig family.
In 2001, Koenig appeared on the MyCityRadio.com coverage of the British Columbia provincial election when the BC Liberals won a landslide over the NDP. Here are clips of Hunky Bill Koenig and Faye Leung, who were guests of hosts Shannon Nelson and Chad Varhaug.
You've been around for a long time. What do you think about a guy like Gordon Wilson?
I'm going to tell you, he couldn't be janitor in my building.
Yeah, that's very good.
Don't you mean to say
a little
that?
Bird over here in my shoulder said, Faye voted for the NDP.
Well,
That means no darn party. You party.
The P&E Fair runs through Labor Day at Hastings Park. Go to pne.ca for more information.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
This is what Justin Trudeau said September 10th, 2015.
Sunshine being the best disinfectant means that we're actually going to be answering Canadians' call for better government through openness, transparency, and integrity. Having a prime minister that tells the truth will be a nice change.
This is what Justin Trudeau said on February 7th, 2019.
The allegations in the Globe story this morning are false. Neither the current nor the previous Attorney General was ever directed by me or by anyone in my office to take a decision in this matter.
This is what Justin Trudeau said on August 14th, 2019.
You've said a couple of times in answer to my colleagues that you take responsibility for what happened in this affair. And I harken back to something you wrote on Twitter, of all places, in 2013, when you said it's hard not to feel disappointed when you're in your government when there is a scandal, new scandal every day. This particular issue has been before Canadians now for many, many months. You've come into some intense criticism from the commissioner today. When you say you take responsibility, what does that actually look like in concrete terms? And what do you say to disappointed Canadians who may not want to vote for you now based on what they're reading today?
Taking responsibility means recognizing that what we did over the past year wasn't good enough. But at the same time, I can't apologize for standing up for Canadian jobs.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to all of those who helped raise more than $100,000 in the Michael J. Fox Foundation Tour de Fox Pacific Northwest in Port Coquitlam on August 17th. The Burnaby kid, who became one of the world's most famous actors in Back to the Future, lives with Parkinson's disease. His charity has raised more than $900 million so far to fund research to find a cure for Parkinson's disease. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting. Custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 18th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on August 18th in 1920, Tennessee became the 36th state to ratify the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution, granting women the right to vote? Women in British Columbia had suffrage in 1916 and elsewhere in Canada, except Quebec, by the end of 1918. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. P-A-T-R-E-O-N.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.